I'm Pat Fredrickson at the University of Missouri-Columbia, and today I'm having a conversation with Sandra Abel, my colleague, about science teacher learning research. So Sandy, tell me what experiences led you to do research in science teacher learning.
Well, I started my career as an elementary school teacher, and I think I received really good preparation to be an elementary school teacher at the University of Iowa. While I was an elementary school teacher, I started to do professional development for other teachers and got very interested in how I could have an effect beyond my classroom. And that's when I went back to school, went back to the University of Iowa for a PhD. And I think it was just a natural for me to fall into research about science teacher learning, because I'd always been a teacher, always wanted to be a teacher or was a teacher, and I was very interested in what made some teachers excellent, what helped teachers become better teachers, those kinds of questions. So I think it was just a natural fit between my interest in being a teacher and my own professional development, and then wanting to study that with other teachers.
I think it was a very similar reason for me as well, how I went down that path. Tell us more about your research career. Did you start out focusing on elementary science teacher learning, or kind of talk us through the path that you took?
Well, I was certainly very interested in elementary teacher learning and elementary teacher education for a big part of my career. I felt like that was where I could make sense of the world of elementary schools. And that's where what I really cared about was what was going on in elementary schools. And I was engaged in teaching methods courses for elementary teachers. So it seemed sort of a natural connection to have my job as a science teacher educator overlap with my interest in doing research about teacher learning. My dissertation was focused on professional development of middle school teachers, but pretty much for the first 10, 12 years of my career, I focused on looking at pre-service elementary teachers and their experiences learning in methods courses and beyond methods courses, their experiences learning in student teaching, and then how they developed as teachers beyond the pre-service program, so professional development kinds of things.
But since I've known you here at the University of Missouri, your research interests have been broader than that. And so what caused that broadening of interest?
I think the shift occurred when I moved to Missouri because my position here was different. Instead of coming here to teach elementary methods, I came here to run the Science Education Center. And as we looked around to see what were the biggest problems that needed our attention at that time, the shortage of qualified science teachers became a really driving force. And so we ended up, we being a team of people at Missouri, ended up developing some new programs for recruiting and preparing middle and secondary teachers in a kind of an alternative certification setting. And then it made sense to start studying how those people learned. The other new thing that happened at that time was that I was jointly appointed in the biology department, and the goal of the folks who hired me to do this joint appointment was that I would think about preparing graduate students in the sciences and faculty members in the sciences for being teachers. And so we developed new courses and we started to study teacher learning at the college level. So I would say that yes, my research interests have broadened in terms of the scope of teacher learning, and that really I'm interested in science teacher learning elementary through college. But the focus is still on How do people figure this really complicated thing out, this the complicated thing being science teaching? And how do people come to do a better job at science teaching? And I think that's just been the driving force for me all along.
So let's take that last question and think about from a researcher's perspective. How have perspectives changed in the field on researching teacher learning over the years, from when you started researching to today? So was your dissertation similar to the work that you do now?
Oh, absolutely not. But now you're making me feel old, because way back then, in the 80s, when I was a student at the University of Iowa, that was still, there was still quite a bit of process product research being done, looking at teacher effectiveness in terms of teacher as a technician. If we ask teachers to do a particular strategy, will they be able to do that strategy or not? So we were sort of at the end of that era. At the same time, we were beginning a new era, which was looking at teachers as not just as subjects of our studies, but teachers as experts, teachers as well, what Gary Fenstermacher calls the known versus the knower. So we used to look at teachers as something to know, and we started looking at teachers as knowers, people who had something to offer to our research. And that started to change the way we went about doing research, from doing research on teachers to doing research with teachers. So back to my dissertation, it was a very much a process product dissertation where we had done professional development with a group of teachers, and we went out to study the effect of the professional development on their teaching behaviors. And we looked at, did teachers ask more open-ended questions? Did teachers use particular kinds of assessments? But it was very much, we had given them this knowledge. Now, were they using it?
Did you interview them at all, or did you only observe? Was it your perspective?
It was observation only. We took videotapes of them. We coded videotapes for teacher behaviors. It was very reductionist and very much the teacher as the subject of the study. I published my dissertation, but curious enough, I never got my dissertation bound, because somehow I knew that that wasn't the kind of research I wanted to do.
Interesting.
But there was nobody at that point in time on my committee who was looking at kind of the new wave of educational research, which was going on at the time, which was the whole move toward qualitative research. And so I sort of had to learn some things on my own about that. And when I went to Purdue, where I had my first job as a professor, I started attending classes on qualitative research, both in the College of Education and in the Anthropology Department, so that I could learn more about these methods that I thought would be a better fit for the kinds of studies that I wanted to do, where I was looking at I wanted to look at teacher learning in some other way that wasn't this reductionist way.
So I'm going to ask you to reflect on what role you think you've played in science ed in shifting that focus to qualitative research.
Well, I can tell you that I was on the editorial board of the Journal of Research in Science Teaching in the late 80s, early 90s, and the movement toward qualitative research had sort of happened in other fields, English education, for example. It was a little slower in science education. I think one of the reasons is because we were holding more to that quote scientific ideal, which that would be a whole different discussion about what is the nature of science, but I think it was harder for science educators to move toward the qualitative perspective. But I do remember being on the editorial board of JRST with Nancy Brickhouse, and Ron Good was the editor, and at one point we were having a discussion about the criteria that we were using to review manuscripts. And Nancy and I were basically making the argument that the review criteria were biased and not inclusive of new methodologies that were becoming available. And so Ron invited us to redo the criteria for review of those manuscripts, which Nancy and I did, and that led to a publication. Doesn't have our names on it, but it was a publication in the journal about how the reviews would be done in the future. And I think it was a very important piece of work, because we were influencing the way that manuscripts would be reviewed and be accepted or not accepted into the journal. So I feel very proud of that work that Nancy and I did.
I think that's work that younger researchers had no idea the behind-the-scenes piece that occurred.
At the same time, it was interesting at NARST, the National Association for Research and Science Teaching. There were groups popping up that were debating the pros and cons of this new methodology, and also groups that were trying to defend qualitative research. Certainly Ken Tobin was a leader in some of those discussions, but I remember faithfully going to those discussions and trying to move the agenda forward. And then I had the opportunity to become an associate editor of the Journal of Research and Science Teaching while I was at Purdue. And we talked a lot about the kinds of methodologies that we would like to promote as editors. And I think we even put together an editorial that talked about moving toward a mature discipline of science education research that could help young researchers feel like they did have a place in the science education community with the kinds of research they were doing.
So, Sandy, now I want to ask you about this new, relatively new, shift in policy in the United States as a call back to quantitative research as being more scientifically based. What's your reaction to the current U.S. policy?
Well, a couple of years ago, we put together a special session at NARST about that topic, and I think the bottom line was that was a very limited view of educational research. I would say I am not anti-quantitative. I think that those wars are long gone, and that what we should be thinking about are what are the important questions that need to be asked, and what are the best ways to go about answering those questions, be they qualitative, quantitative, mixed methods, what have you. I think that this view of, quote, scientifically based literature is flawed on many levels. I think it's interesting that we hold up scientific research, and sometimes we include medical research in that as sort of the model for our work. Yet medical research has been held up as really not having made much progress since the days of putting leeches on people's backs to solve the problem, whatever problem of the day there was. So I think that we need to have a more broad view of how we can go about answering questions in ways that will move our agendas forward, whether they're medical agendas, scientific agendas, or science education agendas. It's just the problems are too big to be solved by any one methodology.
I completely agree with you. So we've been talking about shifts in methodologies and changes. Now I want to go back to science teacher learning as a construct. So what have we learned about how teachers learn? What progress have we made in this field about what we know, how to support teacher learning?
Well, I think it's a great question, and we could probably write a book about that. I think we do know quite a bit. We know a lot about, for example, science teacher subject matter knowledge. But rather than, I guess maybe I want to evade your question for just a minute and think instead about how our views of teacher learning have shifted to help us think about different questions to ask, and the answers to those questions are moving us forward in science teacher education practice. And then maybe that's the most important thing, is that science teacher education research is very practical. It isn't basic research. It's research that needs to be done if we're going to improve how we prepare teachers. So I think the biggest shift in thinking is from this thing I was talking about, teacher as technician, teaching people a set of skills or strategies, to thinking about teachers as knowing individuals and thinking about how, say, a conceptual change approach could really affect the way we look at our research. So what happened in the 90s is that a lot of people started to think about teacher learning in science from this conceptual change approach, and we started to study what do students know when they come into programs. So instead of thinking of people as blank slates that we needed to teach particular strategies to, we started to say, well, we know that they've been in the apprenticeship of observation of science teaching for 18, 20 years, probably 15 years. And we know that they have views coming in about what science teaching and learning ought to be. And so now we actually have some research, some empirical data that tell us, yes, they do have these views. These pre-service teachers have these views about science teaching and learning when they come into teacher preparation programs. And more importantly, those views don't match the views that are being promoted by the science teacher educators in the teacher education programs. So we have a mismatch between what we're trying to accomplish in teaching teachers and what they come to us already knowing and believing. That finding is critical for thinking about how to do teacher education. So if we know they have these views, then it's going to be our job as teacher educators to bring those views to light, to challenge those views, and then to help them see intelligible, plausible, alternative views of science teaching and learning. I think that's led to, for example, greater use of case-based instruction in teacher education, so that students can actually see video examples or read text examples of science teachers in action and see how those views might differ from the views they've always seen as of teachers as tellers and learners as listeners.
I very much had this aha moment a few years ago when I went out and watched my student teachers teach a 5E, and they thought they were doing what I... we thought we were talking about the same thing, and then I saw very clearly that we weren't talking about the same thing. I wanted to ask you about, you teach a rather unique course, a methods course, but it's a college science teaching methods course. And now these are PhD students in sciences who are interested in teaching. So their apprenticeship of observing science teachers is even longer.
Yes.
How has your research in science teacher learning influenced what you do in that one semester course that you have with these people who probably will never take another methods course or another education course?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. Now I've taught methods courses for future elementary teachers, future secondary, middle and secondary teachers, and these future college science teachers. And I'd have to say that overall, the same research findings are helpful in thinking about structuring those courses. Because in every case, we know that these people have a very limited view of what science teaching could look like and need to have some new views, some new pictures of science teaching. And so in the college science teaching course, we try to show them the best science scientists who teach undergraduate courses on campus. We try to show them examples of folks on campus who are doing different kinds of things in order to let them see the alternative views. I would have to say, though, I think the biggest difference in teaching the college science teaching folks is that we have to be aware of the constraints that they're going to face. And those constraints that they're going to face as teachers are very different from what a future elementary school teacher might face. So they may have 300 people in a large lecture class. So we have to think about what does best practice look like in a lecture setting. And we have to be realistic about what we expect these people to be able to do. And so, for example, I think in the past, science educators may have gotten a bad name for saying lecture is bad, but not giving any alternatives. Well, the fact of the matter is that lectures could be good. And so one of the things we do in the course is try to think about what makes a good lecture. Now, how does that all come back to research? Since I've been here at Missouri, we've been working with some college science faculty, watching them teach and watching them think about their teaching and trying to figure out where these points of constraint are and where we can make progress. So a recent study, we looked at what do college teachers think about inquiry. And I think one of the findings was really very important, that they have this view of inquiry, like many people in science education, I would say, that says what the best instruction is open and full inquiry, where students come up with research questions and follow through on investigations. That's their view of what they should be doing.
But it's unattainable.
It's unattainable. It's absolutely unattainable. And they have no alternative views. So that's given us some, that finding has helped us think about what do we need to do to help these folks move toward inquiry in what we're calling achievable inquiry, in ways that work for the constraints that they face in their classroom teaching.
And this led to a current professional development workshop that you're doing with college faculty, and we have a joint student who is studying this.
That's right.
So do you want to just talk briefly about how that led to the next stage?
Well, I work with several science faculty on campus who've been doing very innovative things in their instruction. And one of the things they've been doing is thinking about laboratory instruction differently and trying to move away from cookbook laboratories into laboratories that emulate the work of scientists in very structured ways, not in this full and open inquiry way. And my colleagues in the sciences have gotten grant funding from our National Science Foundation to take their ideas and to do professional development with other college science faculty to help them think about how they can restructure their laboratory instruction. And one of the things, last year we had a summer institute for these college science faculty, as well as their graduate students. And one of the ideas we introduced was the finding from our study about college science teachers' views of inquiry. And we showed them the common view.
Yes.
And we showed them our view. We called it achievable inquiry. And there was a sigh of relief through the whole audience when we talked about that idea, because they realized that they too held that unattainable view, but the folks who were facilitating the workshop did not. And then they started to say, yeah, well, maybe I can change things in my instruction that will help students take more responsibility for their learning, get them more engaged with thinking about science, but not to the extent that it will totally disrupt the structure of the laboratory and what I'm capable of doing.
I think you've given some really nice examples of how research and teaching are just two sides of the same coin, and how I think we both feel this way, of how our research informs what we do in our teaching, and that they're not separate ventures that we're engaged in, and that it's a package for us.
I think maybe we're lucky as science teacher education researchers because we have figured out a way to get more mileage out of the work we do, because we're not always sure when we're teaching and when we're researching, because they are happening simultaneously. And then our research is fitting back into our practice quite naturally. So I think we're the lucky ones.
I agree. And I think it just makes a more coherent whole for me.
Yes.
When that does work. Okay, so recently you completed a major project with Norm Letterman as the co-editors of the new handbook. And you authored one of the chapters in the handbook on science teacher learning. And you chose to organize your chapter around the construct of pedagogical content knowledge, PCK. So you've spent quite a bit of time on this project. And so I want you to talk about PCK. So PCK is a very attractive construct to me, I'll be real honest about that. And so we've seen lots of people play with it, and then we've seen people kind of pull away from it, and then now people are, it's coming back into popularity. From your work on that chapter, I'd like you to talk to me about the advantages and the limitations of this construct. What does this construct buy us? What do we gain from this? And are there limitations with this construct?
Well, I'm going to... These questions are near and dear to my heart because I just finished writing a closing piece for a special issue of the International Journal of Science Education that's just about PCK. And I asked myself those kinds of questions. And, you know, I have to admit that PCK is a very attractive concept for me, because, and it has been ever since I first learned about it, because it helps me think about this work that I do with teacher learning and teacher education. And it gives me an organizer for thinking about the goals I have for science teachers, what I need to know about them as science teachers, how I can help them progress as science teachers. So the idea that Shulman talked about, that there's this special knowledge for teaching PCK that only teachers have, and then Magnuson and some other folks in science education took that to the next step and helped us think about what are the components of PCK, and it's those components, I think, that really help us think about teaching practice and help us think about doing research. It also helped me organize that chapter in the handbook because I used those components to look at the various threads of research. I think the problem with the construct right now isn't the construct itself, but how it's been used or misused or only partly used in the research. And I try to talk about that in the handbook chapter, that it seems to be often in science education research, we like to invent new constructs rather than using the good constructs that we already have.
Or new terms for well-established terms.
That's right. So, I think that we haven't gotten to use the PCK construct to its full extent. I think there's a lot we don't know about science teacher knowledge and the development of that knowledge that the PCK construct could help us with. But if we're more interested in developing new terms, and you can look at the chapter to see what some of those terms might be, then we're not really making good use of the construct, the PCK construct that exists. I think there are some challenges in that, but mostly I think there's opportunities. There's lots of research that needs to be done about what science teachers or future science teachers know about learners, about curriculum, about instruction, and about assessment. When do they know those things? Is there a developmental trajectory for those kinds of knowledge? And how do we, as science teacher educators, help them build those kinds of knowledge? So I think the construct is very useful, but there's a lot of work to still be done. Besides developing some models of teacher knowledge and teacher development of knowledge, I think we have to move beyond some of the descriptive research that we're doing. And descriptive research is really good. It's really important. I've done quite a bit of it. And we do need good cases that show us examples of teacher learning. But we need to move beyond to think also about the why question. How do we explain teacher learning, and how do those explanations then help us build these models for teacher learning? And I think that's going to be the harder thing to get at. And that's because every researcher's life is short, and because oftentimes we have a desire to produce studies that can lead to more quick results. And some of these questions are questions that really take a long time to investigate.
I agree. For me, our questions need to be focused on the longitudinal, but our system in the United States of promotion and tenure doesn't support these long-term studies that are really going to help us answer, I think, what our questions are at this point.
I think that's true. And I think that's true also of in the United States of our doctoral programs.
Yes.
And I've seen some European models that I think are much better models of getting doctoral students engaged in research early on that's going to be a research program for them over 5 years in their doctoral programs. I think at Missouri, we engage students in a lot of research early on, but we don't necessarily help them construct a thread of research throughout their programs. And
I think that's partially the way we're set up for intensive coursework early in the program, that there isn't time.
Yeah,
that
think,
may be part
I think
of it.
So.
So what, I'm going to ask you about advice, but on two different levels. So the first one is just, if someone came to you and wanted to get involved and focus on PCK research, I know you give some advice in the chapter. Would you like to repeat some of that? Or so people who are new to the field and would like to get involved in it, what are some cautions or recommendations that you would make? You talked about building on what we already know.
I think that's really critical. I've been in too many presentations at too many conferences where people have not done their homework, going back in the literature to look at the history of the ideas and how they've developed. I think in the PCK literature and science education, we have a strong foundation, and we should build on that. I think I would advise a new researcher to think about moving from quantifying PCK, and I don't mean that in terms of quantitative or qualitative research, but in terms of defining what PCK people have, to also thinking about the quality issue. What's the quality of teacher knowledge that people have, and how do they not only possess this knowledge, but use it to solve classroom problems? Because I think teacher knowledge is a very active kind of thing, and if
right.
we don't, we have to look, we can't look at it as a static kind of write down what knowledge do you have at this point in time. We have to look at it in terms of how are you using that knowledge to solve practical problems of teaching and learning. So I think that advice would be really important. Build on the past. Make sure you understand the nature of the construct and some of the controversies. There are some different camps, if you will, about what PCK is and is not. And it's probably helpful to understand those camps and then align yourself with one of those or more than one of those. And then to get beyond what we already know, don't do yet one more study of teacher beliefs coming into a program.
But I think we know a lot about
that. We know a lot about that. So now we need to move on and think about these kind of knowledge in use questions and quality questions. Eventually, we need to answer the most important question of all, which is, does teacher knowledge make any difference in their practice, and does that make any difference in student learning? We have these hypothesized connections among those three pieces, but we don't have a lot of empirical evidence about those connections. And so I would also encourage young researchers, but also practicing veteran researchers, to think about moving us forward to make those links a little more, help us know more about those links.
And on a practical level, there are all sorts of issues and harder to get at, but I think that that link is critical because we're making assumptions there about the connection to student learning.
Well, and to be fair to those people, those scientifically based research policymakers, I think in the end their heart's in the right place because they're interested in having research findings that tell us something about the connection between teacher learning and student learning. And I think that that part of the policy is right-minded. I just don't think that the conclusion, therefore we need more experimental studies, is necessarily correct.
Sandy, now I'm going to ask you to give a broader recommendation. You've been a very successful researcher and teacher, balanced the different components that are required of people in higher ed. And so what recommendations would you give for new faculty just starting out in academic positions on balancing teaching and research, and some tips for research in general, beyond PCK?
Okay. Well, the balance question is interesting. I think I kind of answered it earlier when we were talking about how lucky we are to be teacher education researchers. So one of the ways I've achieved balance is to make sure that my research plays into my teaching and back and forth, so that I'm not doing two totally unrelated activities. On the other hand, probably, I don't know how many people I've advised on this very basic part of balance, but you have to put it into your schedule if you're going to do it. So I schedule writing time. I schedule preparation time for preparing for class. I schedule exercise time. And it's only if it gets in my schedule, it'll get done. If it's not in my schedule, it won't get done. And I think that is just very important, because the teaching can be overwhelming, and we could all spend our entire career improving our teaching. Yet we know we have these other parts of what it means to be a science educator that we need to take care of, and what it means to be a person, a parent, a friend, a child, you know, whatever it might be. And we have to make sure we're addressing those things. And that's only going to happen, I think it's only going to happen, if we put it into our schedules and make sure it happens.
You recently talked about a writer's block that occurred in writing a chapter. And this was a conversation that we had a while back. And I remember some things that you said about what you discovered helped you get through that. And I think it was advice that I sort of held on to.
Well, I think I've given this advice to other people and maybe hadn't actually taken it myself, so it was good for me to take it myself. But when students come to me and say, you know, I'm in this analysis quandary, I don't know what to do next, I often send them back to the library to do more reading. And I think when I got that writer's block, I went back and reread some things I thought I was pretty familiar with, as well as read some new things. I think that reading is absolutely critical. We have to always be playing our ideas off of what's out there in the literature. And it's, you know, my reading pile is pretty big, but that's important. I think the other thing that's really critical, and writing teachers will tell you this for sure, is if you have a writer's block, you have to write. Even if all you write is, I'm having the writer's block. And so when I was having that writer's block, the worst thing I think I could have done was to stop writing and to put the writing off. And instead, I just kept going back to the piece. Even if I only wrote a paragraph in a morning, at least I was still writing. And to me, so reading, writing, and the third piece that's absolutely critical is talking to other people. You know, if we really do believe all that stuff about social learning, then we have to apply it to ourselves and think about, you know, if I go out to lunch with you, Pat, and start talking about this, it's going to help me think through some of the issues I'm having. I might start constructing new knowledge by talking through it. I think that collaborating with others is absolutely a critical part of my career. It's the most fun part of my career, and it's the most rewarding part of my career. And that is, you know, you learn so much by working with other people. And I wouldn't be here today having this conversation if it hadn't been for, you know, the teachers, the classroom teachers I've collaborated with, the other science education researchers that I've collaborated with, the doctoral students that I've collaborated with. All those people have enriched my thinking tremendously.
Cindy, I appreciate your honesty in sharing that. You're a prolific writer. You've published quite a bit. And then I think people think, well, this is, you know, a struggle that only I'm having. And then to hear someone else talk about that and then to say, well, and this is how I worked through it, and this is how I was able to, you know, produce what it was that I needed to write. So I think that's helpful to other people to hear that. And we tend to only be known by our published work, the final product, and not know so much about the process that occurred. Mm-hmm. I would like to thank you for sitting down on a snowy December afternoon with me and having this conversation about research and science teacher education. And again, I'd just like to thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.